On About Books, we delve into the latest news about the publishing industry with interesting insider interviews with publishing industry experts. We'll also give you updates on current nonfiction authors and books, the latest book reviews, and we'll talk about the current nonfiction books featured on C-SPAN's Book TV.
This is Rachel from C-SPAN's podcast team, along with my colleague Nate. Join us as we celebrate C-SPAN's 45th anniversary and our inaugural Founders Day campaign.
It all started as a bold experiment on March 19, 1979, when C-SPAN first brought coverage of the House of Representatives into living rooms across America. Let's celebrate C-SPAN's visionary founders who believed in offering unfiltered access to the inner workings of our political process. From Congress to the White House to the courts and beyond, C-SPAN has documented history unfolding without commentary or spin for over four decades.
Help us keep it going. Visit cspan.org/donate today to give a gift in celebration of C-SPAN's Founders Day. Your donation honors the original vision of C-SPAN's founders and helps to advance our mission for years to come. Make your donation today at cspan.org/donate. Thank you.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
And welcome to About Books, a program and podcast produced by C-SPAN's Book TV. Now, in a few minutes, we'll talk with the head of Skyhorse Publishing, which recently acquired Regnery and has become a force in publishing controversial books. But first, here's some of the latest news from the publishing world. Today's show anchor, Savannah Guthrie, is the latest author to battle scammers who use AI technology. Within days of releasing her faith-based memoir, Mostly What God Does, Ms. Guthrie was warning her social media followers about book scams that use her name. Quote, "So many fakes out there," she wrote on her Instagram account. "I didn't write anything other than the book, Mostly What God Does. No workbooks, no studies, no nothing." The Today Show followed up Ms. Guthrie's post with an article about the online fakes and tips on how to spot AI-generated books. Now, earlier this month, Circana BookScan reported that 767 million units of books were sold last year in the U.S. That's down 3% from 2022. Adult fiction sales grew by 1%. That's about 1.5 million books. It's the fifth year of growth in the adult fiction sector. The report also noted that young adult sales, driven by dystopian, romance, and thrillers, also posted gains. Now, children's books experienced the steepest decline last year, selling 13.5 million fewer books than it did in 2022. Now, in the report, Circana industry analyst Kristen McLean offered predictions for 2024 and book sales. She included an expected growth in history and political science books. Those genres, quote, "typically spike in an election year," she said. "If modeled off market expectations based on 2016 or 2020, Circana expects a banner year in 2024. And joining us now is the president of Skyhorse Publishing. So, Tony Lyons, Tucker Carlson described you as the last radical publisher in the United States. What do you think he meant by that?
You know, I think that publishers, to a great extent, have become sort of ways for people to just confirm their biases. So, you know, the big publishing companies don't want to you know, publish books that upset the people who work for them. They view publishing in a totally different way than I do. So I think that books should be disturbing. They should be dangerous. They should challenge people. That people should seek out books that are controversial, you know, that have a totally different point of view than the one that they're comfortable with. And I don't see the point in people reading books that just sort of confirm all their biases. You know, what's the benefit to the reader there? You know, it's sort of maybe easy reading and they can read it while they're doing something else or, you know, not, you know, there's no need to take notes. There's no need to do any research. There's no need to think about it. So, you know, I think that we're at this terrible stage in American history, maybe in world history, where people are not interested in really thinking things through and in looking at opposing points of view. And I, you know, I find that's really a much bigger danger than the danger of, you know, any ideas. So I think that there should be this vigorous marketplace of ideas where people disagree, where they, you know, people turn on the television and they hear both sides of all kinds of things. You know, we published a book in the fall of 2020 called The Case Against Wearing Masks. And at the same time, we published a book called The Case for Wearing Masks. And both of them were sort of in-depth looks at, you know, what the arguments were. And so Amazon, some of the other big tech platforms, took down the case against wearing masks because the government had decided that masks were good and that having anything on the marketplace that challenged that idea was dangerous. So they were able during that period to get all of the big tech platforms, to get Amazon, Google, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, to take down anything that they disagreed with. And there are many cases now that are pending where it was clear that people from government agencies or people from the executive branch actually called up Amazon or YouTube or other places and told them to take material down and in a sense threatened them. I mean, they have so much power and the big tech companies were scared of antitrust lawsuits or, you know, other regulation. So they pretty much felt that they had to do it. And there's some letters back and forth saying, you know, how do you want this censorship to go down? Do you want us to just take the book off or take the information off, or should we de-amplify it? So those are the kinds of things that I think most Americans have believed for decades happen in Russia or China, but, you know, not in the United States, that here we have access to information and we can decide things for ourselves. So, you know, Skyhorse, my goal with Skyhorse is to sort of be the preeminent free speech publisher where people can find things that other publishers find are too dangerous, too challenging, and are afraid to publish, don't want the hassle of it. So I think that there's a real role there and that there are places like Regnery that weren't doing well because in a sense they were just getting, they were getting canceled in the marketplace.
And Tony Lyons, you took that same pro and anti approach with Elizabeth Holtzman and Alan Dershowitz, the case for and the case against impeaching Donald Trump.
Right. And, you know, so I think that's a really interesting way of publishing books and that, you know, I would like people to buy both of those books or to buy the one that they think that they really disagree with. And if their ideas can really stand up, then they shouldn't be afraid. You know, so if somebody really believes something, why not read the opposite point of view? You know, why not say, where are my strongly held beliefs coming from? Is it that I'm being indoctrinated? Is it that I just, you know, grew up in a certain part of the country, so all the people here have that same point of view? I mean, I grew up in New York City. I'm sure that there are a lot of people in New York who have very similar points of view when it comes to politics or some specific issues. And then you go to Alabama and you have people with very different points of view. So the narrative in New York is that the people in Alabama are, you know, not as intelligent as the people in New York. And I'm sure that if you ask the people in Alabama, they would think that the people in New York are just these crazy woke people who have these misguided views that can't really stand up. So the idea is that, you know, any idea ought to be able to stand up to argument. And, you know, that's what I would like to see much more of in this country. And then there's a much more sinister side of it in that, you know, the big tech platforms, the internet started out as this incredible opportunity for just maximum diversity, that every kind of idea, you know, was there somewhere. And if you were willing to do a little bit of research, you could find it. But then at some point, it kind of all went south. And what happened there is that people discovered that you can control the internet so that the internet becomes the best possible source of censorship, that the tools are so incredibly powerful. So while it started out as this opportunity for just this open world where everybody could have a voice, what it winds up being is that you can use bots, you can use specific types of censorship to make sure that it's very, very difficult to get opposing points of view. And when it comes to politics, you can really stifle dissent if you just make sure that nothing that contradicts what your narrative is, you know, can be easily accessed. So that becomes true even with things like, let's say, the Iraq War, where we all saw the beginnings of that. So people who said that there weren't weapons of mass destruction, you know, were censored, were vilified, in some cases lost their government jobs. There was a CIA agent outed as punishment for it. So that was the beginning of it. And then you saw things like, you know, the Snowden story, where there was a war on whistleblowers. But what it's come down to, and it really happened during COVID, is that anybody who disagreed then just kind of disappeared from the internet. So there were people who had, you know, decades of building up their online presence, maybe not decades, maybe 10, 15 years, who, if the government or if a big tech platform decided that something they were saying constituted misinformation, they could have their whole life's work just disappear, just taken down, with no real recourse, no real way to kind of sue the government or sue YouTube or sue Google. And that, I thought, was just such an incredible turnaround in American history and so sad to see. But what it winds up being and what it really can get to is that any kind of dissent can be labeled as misinformation. So when you looked at the definition of health misinformation during COVID, it actually became and was described in many places as anything that contradicts the official government point of view. So you would have one official say something, and anybody who contradicted that official then was scrubbed from the internet. So the problem is that once you give the government that kind of power, it's not easy to take it back. And, you know, so you can say, well, we're in a crisis, so we have to take certain steps to protect people, even if there are many people who would then say, well, you didn't actually protect people, you protected people making certain products, corporations making certain products. But that's a long story that doesn't really fit here. But the idea is that you can then take any narrative about any subject and say that it's the truth. And because it's the truth, anything that contradicts it shouldn't be allowed to be published, either in book form or in any other form. And that, I think, is sort of fundamentally un-American. So I really want to combat that. And I'm working very hard to do that. And I think, you know, that a company like Regnery, that has this really storied history of publishing conservative views for, you know, 75 years, then sort of found itself not well represented in any independent bookstores, for example. Many books that they published, I mean, I didn't really know the details, but I could see from the books that I was publishing. So when I published Robert F. Kennedy's book, The Real Anthony Fauci, you know, it was the best-selling book in America in its first week. It sold 93,000 copies. The New York Times bestseller list made it number 7. They wouldn't accept an ad for it. Big tech platforms wouldn't take ads for it. So it was censored in every possible way. It got no reviews at all, total media blackout, because it was labeled as misinformation, which by the definition that was prevalent then, which was anything that contradicted statements by Dr. Fauci, were per se misinformation. He represented science, and that was where you know the government position had gotten to. So a book that contradicted him, even just by the title, so you didn't have to read any of it to decide that the title itself was misinformation, because it said that a government official might be saying things that were untrue or incomplete or needed further research.
At Outback Steakhouse, your wish is our command. Backed by popular demand, steak and lobster at a special price starting at $19.99. Come enjoy our bold center-cut sirloin seasoned with our signature blend of 17 spices and paired with a buttery, succulent lobster tail. Hurry in to Outback Steakhouse, where your steak and lobster wishes come true at a price you can't miss. Steak and Lobster, starting at $19.99. No rules, just right.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Tony Lyons, is it fair to say that you publish conservative books? I know you just bought Regnery and another conservative publisher as well.
Yeah, so, you know, we publish books across the political spectrum. We have many books coming out this year that are, you know, really solidly conservative books. We have pro-Trump books, but we also have anti-Trump books coming out. We have books that are for Bobby Kennedy. So, you know, it's really across the political spectrum with all the different nuances. And that's the kind of publisher that I want to be. So when it comes to conservative books, I've been really fascinated by the censorship of those books. So that kind of drew me more towards that kind of publishing. And on the, you know, on the Democratic side, if you have a really well-respected Democrat writing a mainstream book right now, you have five, you know, gigantic publishing companies, five companies that, you know, are more than $1 billion companies that are gonna bid on those books. But if you have a really great, you know, exciting, interesting, challenging conservative book, there are not many publishers who would be brave enough to publish them now. So it's a very strange historical moment there. And so I wanted to take part in kind of writing what I see as a wrong.
You've published Woody Allen, RFK Jr., as you said, Alex Jones. Is there anything off limits?
You know, that's always a tough question. And, you know, if a book explores a point of view and, you know, it's a strong argument for whatever the point of view is, I think it's better for the world to have it out there. And I think that what you find is, you know, when you look at this country now, there are really two Americas with two totally different narratives of what the truth is. And, you know, I think that that's really, really harmful, really dangerous, but also bad for the American mind, that we really want the broadest possible spectrum of ideas. And the idea that both sides have, that there's all this misinformation and that ought to be taken down. You know, really, the truth is decided, like I said before, in the marketplace of ideas, and that it's much better to have it done in the town square with people making their very best arguments rather than a publisher or a government or a big tech company deciding for us what the truth is.
Some of the other authors published by Skyhorse include Ted Cruz, Paul Manafort, Chris Hedges, and Julian Lennon. Where did the name Skyhorse come from?
The name Skyhorse came from an employee who worked at the company many, many years ago. I really liked the name. It doesn't really have much to do with the person that it came from. But I had started off thinking that I was gonna call it Pegasus Books. And what I liked was the idea of something sort of soaring into the clouds, you know, something big, some big idea, some new way of publishing. And but at the time that trademark was taken, you know, there's another publisher called Pegasus Books. So Skyhorse seemed like a good alternative to that. And it's a name that I really like now, you know, totally separately from the history of where the idea of it came from.
Well, Tony Lyons, you started with Lyons Press. Does that still exist?
Yes. So my father started Lyons Press in 1985. He was a professor of literature in New York. He wrote, I believe, 26 books and literally thousands of articles in newspapers and magazines. He's still alive. He's 91 years old, an incredible man. And so he founded Lyons Press and hired me. I had gone to law school, practiced law for about 18 months, and then joined his publishing company. And I helped him run that up until 2001. And then we sold the company and I went with them and then ran it for the company that bought us for 3 years. And they are still publishing books, yes.
Will you keep the Regnery imprint or fold that into Skyhorse?
Definitely keep the Regnery imprint. I think it's a great brand, and I'd like to, you know, be a good steward of the brands that we take on.
What about AI? Would you publish a book written in AI?
Yeah, I mean, my feelings there are that, you know, it's a very complicated area. And I think that that as a free speech publisher, that I should be open to all the different historical changes. So, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical of, you know, sort of how it's going to all play out. And with certain kinds of books, it seems like it's not going to play out well. But in theory, you know, if it was, for example, somebody was going to write a practical book, and it was somebody who was an expert in that area, and they had written many, many articles, and AI then became a way for them to sort of shortcut the whole process and say, write a book in my own voice based on my own articles on how to do some specific thing. You know, so to the extent that it would just save them 500 hours work and then create an authentic book that was their idea based on, you know, their form of writing, their style, their ideas, you know, that I think isn't a bad thing. And that, you know, anytime we can find ways historically to do things more quickly and get a product that's, you know, just as high quality, that's fine. You know, I think that there are a lot of dangers to it too, and that we're starting to see what some of those are, that there's all kinds of bias that can go into the process of AI. But I'm open to anything.
Tony Lyons founded Skyhorse in 2006, 57 New York Times bestsellers so far, more than 10,000 books on the backlist. The Wall Street Journal says about him, quote, "Mr. Lyons doesn't use sensitivity readers, and that alone qualifies him as a maverick in today's environment. But he's really an old-fashioned civil libertarian, wary of power in all its forms. He especially deplores the extent to which social media platforms, traditional media, and government seem to have joined hands to combat misinformation. He sees such coercive unity as antithetical to the healthy clash of viewpoints necessary for discovering truth." Tony Lyons is the publisher of Skyhorse. We appreciate your spending a few minutes with us.
Thanks so much.
And you're watching About Books, a program and podcast produced by C-SPAN's Book TV. Well, each week dozens of new books are published. Here's a few. Author Peter Schweitzer is out with his latest book, Blood Money: Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye While China Kills Americans. Mr. Schweitzer's previous book also focused on China. His 2022 book was Red-Handed: How American Elites Get Rich Helping China Win. Another new book, Nick Troiano, has released The Primary Solution: Rescuing Our Democracy from the Fringes. Mr. Troiano is executive director of Unite America, which advocates for election reforms like nonpartisan primaries and independent redistricting. And one other new book to note, former federal prosecutor Andrew Weissman and New York University law professor Melissa Murray compiled the four criminal indictments against former President Donald Trump into one book. It's called The Trump Indictments, The Historical Charging Documents with Commentary. Now, this book includes a timeline of the four cases, a guide of those charged alongside the former president, and historical comparisons to cases against other former political leaders. Mr. Weissman served as a lead prosecutor in former special counsel Robert Mueller's office, and he previously authored the book, Where Law Ends, Inside the Mueller Investigation. And we want to note one book review this week. The Guardian's Martin Pengelly took a look at the Washington book, How to Read Politics and Politicians. It's by Carlos Lozada of the New York Times. Mr. Pengelly calls the book, quote, "an authoritative overview of U.S. political publishing in the last decade." And Carlos Lozada, by the way, will be a guest in the coming weeks on C-SPAN's Q&A program. And this week on Book TV's Afterwards program, journalist Kara Swisher talked about her career covering the tech industry and its key players. Here's a preview.
Burn Book is an expression, actually Mean Girls is out now, which is kind of fortuitous for me. But it's a book you write things you really think about people, and you're not, people aren't supposed to see it. And of course, that's the whole premise of that movie. And you have fun with it, and it's sort of gossipy and mean a little bit, but funny. And so I decided that's why what I was doing in my memoir of what my 30 years covering Silicon Valley. The same time, the subhead is a tech love story, because I love tech.
Yeah.
So I don't want this idea that, you know, there's a lot of tropes out there, you know, tech is terrible. It's not terrible. It's how it's being used, essentially. And so I wanted to say, I love tech, but let me tell you what happened.
Yeah.
In this journey to these people becoming the world's richest and most powerful people.
And a reminder that Afterwards airs every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Book TV. Well, thanks for joining us for About Books, a program and podcast produced by C-SPAN's Book TV. We'll continue to bring you publishing news and new author programs. And a reminder that you can get this podcast on the C-SPAN Now app, and you can also watch online anytime all of our author programs at booktv.org.